Lipstick is literally a product to die for, a small stick of dye used to color the lips. It consists of wax or silicone for body, oils for suppleness and shine, and pigment powders for the color. We give lip service to the idea that lipsticks are functional, but their main function is not to cover the lips, but to communicate without moving them. 84% of American women wear lipstick, and they each buy an average of 5 sticks a year. As usual in the American Studies Museum, a few careful questions can help us to understand the cultural patterns that we normally take for granted. Why do we color the lips and not other facial features? Why don't we dye our noses or our ears red? Why is red the primary color? Why not black or brown or yellow? Why don't men use lipstick? In tackling questions like these, the crack research team of the American Studies Museum has discovered that in America, lips are considered both sensuous and sensual. We use lips not just for speaking and eating, but for kissing and slurping and smacking. Even when they aren't colored, lips are the express route to expressiveness, and lipsticks heightens the lips' literal attractiveness. The color red, which is culturally a call for attention, draws a viewer's eyes to the lips, which may then speak or smooch or just smile, framing a set of teeth, preferably perfectly white and orthodontically adjusted. Lovely lips can make a man smack his own lips, which are generally not stuck with lipstick. The Gallup poll has never asked men why they don't wear lipstick, but Dr. America has his own hypothesis. Men don't wear lipstick because women do. It's a gender marker, a way that in an increasingly confusing territory, we can still tell Jack from Jill. Women wear lipstick and other makeup because, historically, it was more important for them to attract a man than vice versa. Even today, lipstick marks an important occasion in a girl's growing up. It's a rite of passage into the world of contrived cultural femininity, notes cultural critic Rita Friedman, author of the book Body Love. Little girls learn the lesson early that a woman's body must be transformed to be acceptable. And little boys learn, Dr. America assumes, that little girls will be transformers. For this reason, some early feminists opposed the inauthenticity of cosmetics and other cultural cover-ups. Concerned as much for the body politic as for the body cosmetic, they invited women and men to work together for a world of substantial equality. Preferring to be known for their brains and ability, some of these women stopped keeping up appearances. In many ways, in a culture deeply dedicated to the proposition that surfaces count, this proved more controversial than their policy proposals. It was still possible to put down a woman by calling her ugly, and the politics of attractiveness proved attractive to many opponents of feminism. Second and third wave feminism has been more congenial to the modification and commodification of the female body. Recently, in a book called The Lipstick Proviso, author Karen Learman contended that women should feel free to make their own choices about their bodies, including choices that make them more attractive. Lipstick, she says, should not be seen as a political choice. But defining something as apolitical is itself a political act. It's an example of what Dr. America calls the politics of no politics in modern America, a politics that exercises power by keeping certain subjects from seeming political. From the American Studies Museum, this is Dr. America, following the lipstick traces of modern American culture.